Okay. So I'd like tonight to try to wrap things up, put some finishing touches, and then hopefully segue into the next topic if we have time for it, to figure out what's happening with next week and then the following weeks, because I have a few chasanas coming up, but Emir Tashem will be in touch in terms of that. So we discussed last week a lot of the issues with Bona. We almost covered majority of the issues with Bona. We pointed out last week that there is a discussion. This is what asked some very good questions last week about the issues of covering pots. So what is the heter? The poskim talk about it. The Taz, the Magen Avraham, they talk about the reason why you're allowed to cover pots, because essentially even when you cover a pot, you're taking a lid and you're covering and you're making a tent, really, inside. You have a tefach by tefach space, and there's an open space there, and that's considered an ohel in terms of halacha, so why you're allowed to do that. So I quoted the Taz's opinion, that the Taz says that any time that's the derech tashmisho, that's the normal way to use the item, so then that is something that would be mutter. I wanted to just elaborate on that because there was a little bit of a few questions that people asked, that why don't you just apply that svara everywhere? Why don't you say that anytime I put a rain cover on top of a stroller, which we said was absolutely prohibited unless it's done in the correct way, that's just the normal way to use it. So I think just to give a little background where this idea of derech tashmisho that we apply in different areas, we spoke about it by the awning of the house, that covers the sukkah or the deck. That would be something that would be permitted, and we spoke about it by the cover of the stroller that opens and closes. So essentially, you're right. It's really considered an ohel right there. You're creating a covering, and it's actually protecting. But when something is normally open and closed, just like I don't look at the opening and closing of a door and the opening and closing of a window that's part of a structure. I don't view that as binyan. I just view it as using the item in its normal function. So therefore, there are certain things that you could extend that to, that it's now like connected to its essential purpose, and therefore every time I'm utilizing it, I'm not building it and constructing it and destructing it and destroying it every time. No, I'm just using the item in its normal function. So that's where the poskim applied it. However, if you're putting a brand new tent, even though that's its function, that wouldn't be a svara that we could now apply derech tashmisho. That's the way to put it. So according to the Taz, covering lids, When it comes to the pots, it would be absolutely permitted because all the lids are normal to be covered, and that's derech tashmisho, that's mutter. The problem is the Magen Avraham is not in agreement with the Taz, but the Magen Avraham does say that, and Rosh Shlomo Zalman understands the Magen Avraham like this. But if you have a handle on the pot and it's clear that it's not like a normal covering, then he would agree with the Taz that it wouldn't be viewed as covering a tent and covering, but rather it's that would be a situation where it would be mutter as long as the pot has a handle. So that was the question that really came up, which is really Lamaisa, is okay, so what happens if you're covering certain foods, a fruit platter, a bowl or something that actually has some space with not a cover, a lid of a pot that has a handle according to the Magen Avraham, but with tinfoil or with saran wrap? What about those issues? In theory, right, according to the, at least the Magen Avraham, where there's no handle, that should pose a problem. The Mishnah Berurah does quote this Magen Avraham, so why is that mutter? So I found a letter, I found the tshuva of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach that discusses this issue, and Rav Shlomo Zalman thought that as long as these tinfoils, Niyar Kesef, he calls it, and the saran wraps were prepared before Shabbos, so then they could be viewed similar to the pot with a handle, with a lid with a handle, or according to the Taz, the normal derech tashmisho of covering, and those would be situations where it would be permitted to cover the pot. So bottom line, both according to the Magen Avraham and according to the Taz, as long as you have these things prepared before Shabbos, that would be considered a lid cover of a pot that you could also cover the food, which I know people like to do in order to protect it from bugs and things like that, Whereas downstairs, to have a separate tent that we had, like that little net, you know, did they have it this Shabbos when I wasn't there at the Kiddush? Was it there? No? Okay. That would be something that's problematic. That's not considered a cover. But if you didn't have things prepared, so then a person shouldn't. Or any other covering or a towel that's not usually used. You know, if you're going to put now a not classic covering on top of a bowl or something like that, that would potentially problematic. Yeah. No. I think it just has to be that it was said. I leave these here. I make sure to cut, like, outside by tinfoil. You're anyways going to cut it before Shabbos. Right. So as long as it's set aside before Shabbos, this is, and you know before Shabbos that this is what I use this for. So I think that would be okay. Yeah. Covers on the hot plate. Right, so I think it's like a... So if it's like a tablecloth that there's no space on top, then it's fine. If it's just your tins, and there's like two walls of tins, and then it's on top. And then it's on top. So, I think that's mutter. I'll tell you why. Essentially, you're not moving around the tins. The tins are already on there. So now, if we analyze what we learned last week, so what am I doing right now? I'm not moving around the walls of this tent because the walls are already there. So what am I doing? I'm just putting on a gag. I'm just putting on a roof. Putting on a roof, if you're not using what's underneath, is mutter. You know, essentially. And so me'ikra din, it should be mutter. And then you probably have other things to rely on. So I think that would be okay if it wouldn't. Me'ikra din, it should be okay. And you probably have other things to be samech on there as well. If there is a tefach or there's no tefach, you know, in terms of the price. But I think there's still what to rely on, even if... You just have to be careful. I don't know what these covers, I've never seen them, but you have to make sure there's a total other issue in terms of these covers of hatmana. You know, because as long as it's open, so then that's okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah, you had a question?
No, it was similar.
Okay, fine. Right. The only question would be, I quoted last week, that the Rashba, Me'ikar Adin, would be mutter as long as you're not using anything underneath. According to the Rashba says even if you're not using anything underneath, you should try to be machmir. But I think there will be other svaras. I think it's okay. Fine. So that's in terms of just getting back to the Kisui Hakderus, the covering of the pots, and why that should be mutter and whatnot. Fine. So that's one thing that I want to get to just to finish up and wrap up in terms of binyan. But now I wanted to get to the next issue. There is an issue that we didn't cover in terms of binyan. We spoke about last week that when we are we good? Everyone's good with the strollers and every okay good. So in terms of spreading a tent and spreading an ol, so we discussed that there are two types of tents. If there's a tent that I'm going to use and I'm going to protect underneath, like when it comes to the stroller, so I don't care if there are mechitzas or there are no mechitzas, like we just said, the fact that I just have a shelter, the fact that I have a roof, that's already problematic by the fact that I'm using that, area. However, if I'm not using the area, so then me'ikar adin, it would be dafka with mechitzas and with a gag would need more of a structure. So, one thing we didn't discuss is what about if you have mechitzas without a gag? What happens if you have a wall? So I want to know binyan, a temporary binyan, again because we're outside the structure of a tent that's going to stay for many days, like we spoke about the sukkah that would be potentially even a shaila d'oraisa, or anything that's going on to the structure of the house that we started off the first year that would be a potential issue d'oraisa. We're in rabbinic territory. We're in Durabon, and we're talking in the world of Ol Arai, like we introduced last week. Temporary, kids are playing. It's going to be demolished right away. It's not going to stay. It's just for the game. But even Midurabon, Chazal made a takana Midurabon that you should prohibit rabbinically, even an olal arayah, gzeira atu, an olal keva. So, what about if you don't have a gag? What if you don't have a roof? You have mechitzas. Is a person allowed to put up a mechitza on Shabbos? Just a wall. So what's the halacha? So this actually was a machlokas rishonim. Rashi was very lenient on this opinion. Rashi was of the opinion that there wasn't an iser binyan when it comes to mechitza. And Tosis is very bothered. Tosis brings rayas from many different gemaras in Shabbos, gemaras in Erevin, that there seems to be a problem of binyan even when it comes to mechitza, when it comes to mechitza alone. So the question is, what are we paskin about this issue? So bottom line, we paskin, because Rashi has certain proofs throughout the Gemara that Amoroim were not bothered by mechitzas. So sometimes they're bothered, sometimes they're not. What's the answer to this question? So there's a difference in halacha based on the function of the mechitza. If you're just stam putting up a wall, technically, Rashi is right, and that's the way we paskin l'alacha. There is no problem of ol arayah if I put up a temporary mechitza. But if I put up a mechitza, and that mechitza is doing something in a halachic realm, then that's a problem of binyan on Shabbos. What does that mean? This is what's called and coined by Tosos, called a mechitza hamateres. There's a mechitza that is matir, that has halachic significance. Who can give me an example of a mechitza that has halachic significance? Let's go to the sukkah. Where is halachic significance in the mechitza of a sukkah? Depends which wall. If you have one of the three walls, so that's a mechitza amateris. That's a real functional mechitza. That's what creates the shame sukkah. Technically, all right, we try to be machmir, we try to make sure to have four walls, you know, to make it, to satisfy all the poskim. Those are just chumrah. Technically, biblically, you don't need a fourth wall, right? Everyone comes home with the beautiful vart of the gra that says sukkah is the osios samach chaf hey, right? And the Vilna Gaon pointed out that it's all the different dimensions of a kosher sukkah. You could have four walls, you could have three walls, and you could have Shnei Tfanos Vishlishi Afilu Tefach, and the third wall could even be a Tefach like a hay. It's a beautiful vart of the Gra. Just to be Moisif, remember this, if you remember this till next Sukkot, I'll be impressed. But to be Moisif, they say Rav Soloveitchik used to give Parsha Shir on Motzei Shabbos after Shabbos. So he said, well, what's the tachlis of saying Parsha Shir Motzei Shabbos after Shabbos? He says, I don't want people just to come to just say a word at the table. I want people to really to learn, and if they're going to remember it by next year, so then that's really a goal. So it's not Sukkot time, but there's a beautiful word of the Arizal that the Shlishi, the Shnei Tfanos Shlishi Afilu Tefach, right? If you form that with your arm, so it looks something like this. So the Arizal says, what does that mean? This is the form that a person has when they're hugging another individual. They take their arm and they wrap it around the other person, and they're grasping them at the end. So that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving us a hug after the Yom Nora, and that's the Shnei Tfanos Shlishi Afilu Tefach of the Arizal. So if it's one of those walls, so that's a machitza materis. So that would be an isser for you to somehow put up. It probably would be even more of an issue because it's keva. It's going to be for kama yamin, but something that's being matir, that's one example of a mechitza materis. But there are other examples of mechitza materis, that this comes up, halacha l'maisa. Comes up in terms of, you know, doing things in front of svarim, you know, if a person, you know, the Gemara talks about tashmish amita, the Gemara talks about bodily functions, things that I can't be in front of sifrei kodesh, which was, these halachas are not always spoken about, but it's important. You know, I always make sure to tell my chasanim in their shmuzes before they get married that they have to know the halachas of sifrei kodesh, and when things are in the room, there are certain things that can't be done in the room, and I have to make sure that there's a halachic mechitza. It's not necessarily that you have to totally block it, because al pidin, the Mordechai, when he's talking about this issue, the Mordechai says you could have svarim. And if there's a halachic mechitza, how high does a halachic mechitza have to be considered a wall? It's the exact same dimensions as a sukkah. It has to be 10 tefachim high. 10 tefachim high is not so high. That's three, according to Rav Moshe, that's 3 feet high. that's not blocking necessarily everything. But as long as there's a halachic wall in front of what whatever I'm doing, those other types of activities, so then that's going to be matir, that's going to permit me to get involved in those activities, even though there might be svarim on top that can clearly see what I'm doing and not necessarily covered, but al pidin, that's considered a separate rishus. It's a halachic reality. We live in a halachic reality, and just because it's in front of these svarim, it doesn't matter. If that's considered a different room, rooms are not decided by my architect. Rooms are decided by the halachic process, where there's a mechitza, whether there's no mechitza. So the Mordechai is talking about this issue. Mordechai is talking about Tashmish Shamita. He wants to put up a mechitza. He's talking about Sivri HaKadosh, but he also talks about Lifnei HaOr. Right, Tashmish, one of the halachas Shulchan Aruch talks about in terms of the lights on, in terms of if there's a candle in the room, so you're not supposed to have Tashmish Shemitah in front of the candle. So the Mordechai talks about on Shabbos, what happens if a person wants to set up a permissibility in that room, but now he's going to put a mechitza in front of that candle, in front of that light. That's a problem, says the Mordechai, because now he just made a mechitza hamateris. He made a mechitza, but a halachic mechitza. This mechitza now has ramifications and now allows him to do things that he wouldn't do otherwise. So those are some of the, or if a person, you know, there's tsoa over there. There's things that it's not appropriate to say divrei Torah or whatever it is. So these are examples of mechitza materises. So that would be a problem. So, yeah, question? No question. Okay. So here's the most surprising thing, and I think you're gonna be a little shocked with what. So what would be the most classic example of, you think, a mechitza materis, outside of everything that we just spoke about inside the house? What would be a classic example of mechitza materis that would probably be usher on Shabbos? I'll give you a hint. You're not so far away. You're not sitting so far away from it. Mechitza nishul. Classic mechitza materis. You can't daven with men and women sitting together. So now for me to put the mechitza up in shul, I would have thought that this is absolutely prohibited. And I open up a Shulchan Aruch. I couldn't believe this the first time I saw this. You open up a Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah says, absolutely permissible for you to put up the mechitza in shul on Shabbos. Why? Why is that a mechitza materis? So this is what's interesting. The answer is, you know, yesterday I was at a chasana. So I was sitting and I chapped a mincha. I got there a little late, so they had mincha by the chasana station. I missed it, and thank God I chapped a mincha while they were waiting for the chasana and kala. And then I saw there were two women that were just standing there in the minyan. So I wasn't fully sure what was going on. But they were behind, and the minyan was in front. So I was okay with it. It was fine, and So they were davening with them. Technically, there's no problem. Really, and this is important for people. People make this mistake when it comes to Sheva Brachos. There's no problem for a woman. You know, there's no din. We can't say, you know, Kedusha or whatever it is if a woman's around. As long as when I'm saying Divrei Kedusha, Dvarim Sheva Kedusha, as long as everyone's dressed appropriately, as long as I'm not saying it Keneged Erva, as long as all the dinim of Erva, you know, are covered, and that's okay. And that's really the necessity for a mechitza. So the Minhag HaOlam has become that we have to have a mechitza. That's a minig. It's a minig that in shuls, and it became such a popular thing, and I'm not suggesting at all that we should take down the mechitza, and I'm sure everyone knows that, but al pi din, al pi halacha, it's not necessarily a matir, because technically, if we didn't have, you know, mechitza, let's say we just had men in this, it's kind of like Shabbos mornings. Let's say we just had men in the shul, you know, for the most part, and there wasn't whatever. We took out the mechitza. I don't know. My talmidim came out, and we don't have enough room. We took out the mechitza entirely, right? And then a woman wanted to come down and sit down. So technically, you know, to say that it's usher to daven in that shul, it wouldn't necessarily be the case. Obviously, it's shalok minhag ha'olam, and we want to have a mechitza in the shul. And Rav Meisher writes Truvis that a mechitza has to be, you know, a certain height. And I'm not. I'm just in terms of understanding. So that would not be a mechitza materis, and that's one of the examples the Ramah says where a mechitza would be allowed to be put up. That's what's called a mechitza l'shem tznius ba'alma. If you're just putting up a mechitza for tznius, just to create a separation, but not to be mati or anything, not to have any halachic significance. So, of course, it's necessary, and the Ramah is obviously advocating that men and women should sit separately in shuls, both in shiurim and in davening. But in terms of now, that now becoming what the Shulchan Aruch says is the accepted practice that mechitzas are usher under, are prohibited under binyan arai, is only by a mechitza materis. It would not fall into that category of being a mechitza materis. Yeah, sure.
Or you're saying like actually like
building something. Well, so building something really kind of, it depends. Meaning that really gets involved into things we spoke about sticking things together. And you could have, if you're really constructing something, so we know that binyan bekelim, if you're taking things apart and, you know, and sticking things in and screwing things in, that could be binyan d'oraisa, right? That gets into our first shear, that it depends on the case. But let's say you had, I don't know, just like this table folds up and folds out, and we know folding up thin things in and out, just like a folding table. Let's say you had a, you know, you had a retractable mechitza, that you had an ability to just flip it out and to be a mechitza. Right. That would be the same issue. If it's a matir, it would be a problem. No.
Fine.
Tznius is always fine. Yeah, exactly. As long as you're not violating any of the other issues of binyan, it's totally fine to make that mechitza.
So
technically,
the second chair is not really.
No, not a problem. Not a problem. And that's what people will do. Shuls all the time. You'll have people move around mechitzas all the time. Where in theory, people should think about that. Why should that be mutter? That's really a problem. Now it's appropriate to daven. The answer is it's l'shem tznius ba'alma, and therefore it's mutter.
And the walls that like pull out in the shul, you know, like
that's fine. That's fine. That's no different than opening doors and closing doors, and opening up and closing windows and sliding doors and really taking, we said, even the toilet paper rod. That's the normal function of these things, or the soap dispenser that we spoke about. That's the normal way to use these things. It's absolutely permissible. Okay? So that is mostly, pretty much we covered all of Hilchos Bonet. We left out one issue about hats, but, you know, I decided not to because it's not the minig over here to so much to wear. There is a discussion about hats, but pretty much most of our hats are okay in terms of oil, and therefore we, that's in terms of Hilchos Bonet. Okay. I want to actually cover very quickly another malacha, because there's not really so much for me to say. Everything we discussed, I want to cover the malacha of Soser. The malach of Soser, which is destruction, which we spoke a little bit about, is pretty much based on everything we've developed in Bona and just reversing it. So whenever you have an Isser Binyan, so you're going to have an Isser Soser. And whenever you're going to have an Isser D'Oraisa of Binyan, you might have an Isser of Soser. You just need to add in, when is it going to be D'Oraisa? Is going to be in a situation where it's a Soser Almanas Livnos. In general, we've learned in the past that anytime you're doing things that are absolutely destructive, there's no positive purpose and productive purpose in your malacha, in your activity, so then that's not going to be a malacha d'oraisa. Everything was malachas machsheves. Everything that was done in the Mishkan had some productive purpose. So if I'm just going to walk around and just start destroying things, even if I'm taking a bat and I'm bashing windows and I'm soser, right, and I would be a big mazik, so I would just be violating Nisr d'Rabbanan of Shabbos. I'm violating Nisr mazik d'oraisa, and I'm a gazlan, and I have other issues, and I'm going to have to pay for that. But in terms of, we just look at it from the perspective of Hilchos Shabbos, that would not be a problem. I don't remember, Lauren, this was what I was grappling with. You remember that Shabbos with Uzi? Remember when you guys got locked in Maltese, you guys got stuck? That was, they were locked out of their house. So that was a part of one of the sniffim I used to try to unlock the case of getting into that house. But it's something I think about all the time. But we tried to try to add shinuyim and things that were really, it was a big shasad chak, you know, for Shabbos. But that's something that's important, that any time you're being soser, if you want to know if it's d'oraisa, it's going to be stira amanas livnos. So if I knock down a house because I want to make another house there, so that would be stira d'oraisa, stira of amalacha d'oraisa. That would be a productive type of stira, because I can't build unless I knock down the first structure. Sometimes putting things down, but sometimes being destructive has its purpose and it has a positive function. So, but And wherever it's going to be Daraisa, it's going to be Daraisa. Wherever it's going to be Darabanan, let's say we talk about Ol Arai, all the things that we discussed would have the reverse effect when it comes to Stira. And that's what I spoke about, that you have to make sure that you don't totally destroy the Ohel that you created, the Tosefes Ohel when it came to the stroller of the carriage. You want to make sure that the awning's still open when you're going to take off the cover of the net or the rain cover in terms of those things. So that's pretty much, in a nutshell, all of Melechus Stira. And wherever we said that that's not going to be Melechus Bona because this is its normal function, whatever it is, so it's not going to have be Melechus Stira either. And anything that we said that is, you know, is foldable, is retractable, is what's called an Halacha Ovid V'Koi. You know, we talked about, you know, folding chairs or beds or packing place. So just like they're not Bona, they're not going to be Stira in the reverse as well. But anything that will be Bona, like putting back the window, putting back, what do we have, the example of the crank on the window. So taking it off would also be a malach of stira. Stira doesn't have to be, just like bona doesn't have to be hammering things in. It could even be in a roughly way, even if it's loose, if it's on the house, if it's connected to the structure of the house. So stira would be taking it off. That would also be a malacha that we should be concerned with. So you have both sides of the same coin, and you're already done with two malachas right away. Yeah. Right, so did anyone test out the trifle? I didn't get any trifles by my door, so did anyone test out? By the next time I'm Zucker, the guys are going to test it out. We're going to take the trifle out of the bowl. We're going to. So assuming... Well, let's... Right. Right, so I'm saying, that's what I'm saying. So assuming... So Lauren had a svara to say that the trifle could stay. That was the svara? The trifle would stay?
No.
The trifle would not stay. So what did you say would stay? Seven-layer cake is not a function of the bowl, right? Seven-layer cake would... I'm sorry, you said trifle was not a problem because it wouldn't stay if it wasn't for the bowl. Right, exactly. So assuming that that's right, so then you're not going to have stira either, right? Because you never had binyan in the first place. But if you had bona when it came to seven-layer cakes, you want to know if I would eat the seven-layer cake now and say what's done is done... Right. Right. I would assume that anything that's achila, derech achila, would not be stira. But that's a fascinating question. No, so I think all that derech achila, I think that would not be stira. But it's an excellent question, yeah.
The other thing is, like, I don't know, I feel like we all do this, like, when we were kids, like, on sukkahs, you'd, like, build the sukkah out of, like, pretzels and marshmallow fluff, and you, like, as, like, an activity, I don't know, like, in groups or something.
So...
Would you be allowed to do this, or then eat it there?
So you really like building a tent,
like,
with the sukkah?
Like, you build the sukkah out of food, and then you...
With mechitzas and agag. Right, it depends if there's a tefach. That's a good point. You got to get a really small sukkah. Yeah. But if it, let's say it had a tefach, it was a nice size. Let's say it had a tefach there. Then I think we hold that there's binyan ba'ochlin. That would be a problem. Yeah. If it has the ability to stay on its own, even though the purpose is to eventually eat it, you know, the post can discuss binyan l'shah is also a big shaylif, and there's some cipher that was made called binyan l'sha, but we're not usually make on it. I think a person should be machmer. So excellent question. Yeah, Lauren.
You know, we talked about Lego building.
Yeah.
What about, like, other toys? Like, if your kid comes, this broke, can you snap it on with that wall under bone?
Ah, so we didn't get to machmer patish yet, but let's say give me an example. Uh-huh. And it doesn't usually come on and off, right? It's not supposed to come on and off. It's not supposed to come on and off. And it's stuck in.
Right.
Yeah, I would say not to pop it back in, but the car is not muktzah because the car is still usable. So you just put it, you know, you'll fix it after Shabbos. Yeah, but if it's real hiduk and it's, again, there's poskim that would rely because there's no way to be tokeya on it, so that would be mako, but I would teach him that we're going to put this away till after Shabbos in terms of that. the piece does not become mukta. No, the piece does not become mukta because as long as the item is functional, the Gemara talks about a sheda that the delis comes off, which is similar to this, that since the item is still functional, I can use the item, so therefore we're not, Chazal weren't concerned that if I'm going to continue using this, then I'm automatically going to put it back, so therefore nothing becomes mukta, both the piece and the item. If the item is not functional, like we talk about different situations where I can't use my glasses and I'm going to put the screw in and that's the only way, so then Chazal were considered, no, maybe Shema Yitka, maybe he's going to put it back together, so then they made it, maybe it made it a mukta. But these toys, you know, I'm just thinking about my old, you know, cars, you know, if the door would come off, so that's sometimes what happens when the guys get a little messy, you know, doors come off and we have to continue the mission, you know, like that. Okay, yeah. So, okay, so that really gets into removing a nail from let's say, somewhere on the wall would be the malach of stira. That would be a problem. If there's a need, and that gets into really, we should really give a series on that in terms of situations of shas and chak when you have to rely on kulas, and it's always better to ask, you know, before you do and you implement a heter, like the case of the of getting locked out or whatever shas and chak it is. So one, if people are getting injured and it's a problem, so then it might be mutter, and it might even be mutter without a shina, you know what I'm saying? If it's a real hezek, if people are getting damaged, so chazal were sometimes makel when it comes to isurim derabanan b'makom hezek rabin, that people are getting damaged. But of course, if you're going to have a shina there and people are getting damaged, I would say it's really, on the one hand, it's derabanan because it's sosara shalom and aslivnos. You're not going to reconstruct it. You don't want it there. You're not going to put it back. You're not going to do anything. And on the other hand, you're doing a shinoi, so that's a shvus to shvus. So even if it wasn't a hezek, shvus to shvus, l'makom tzarech, I think that would be something that would be permissible. Yeah. Okay? So that's in terms of bone and in terms of soser. Just trying to make sure we finished all of bone. I think so. I think that's it in terms of malachas bone. Okay. So now, there is another malacha that Lauren just mentioned that's very similar to bona that we're not going to really have so much time to get into, which is the malacha of makeh bepatish. So it's not entirely clear what the difference between makeh bepatish and bona is, and that's kind of the confusion within the malacha of makeh bepatish. Why do you call one bona and why do you call the other makeh bepatish? What is makeh bepatish? Makeh bepatish is the finishing touches of an item. It's the makeh bepatish. It's like the saying, you know, the nailing in the hammer, that's the final blow. That's makeh bepatish. That's where they got it from. Makeh bepatish, we're finishing up. And the makeh bepatish is, you know, it's in yeshivish lingo, you know, what like the tachlis, the makeh bepatish. What's the makeh bepatish? What are you trying to say? What are you trying to tell me? So that's the makeh bepatish. So many Rishonim clarify this malacha, and I think it's just helpful conceptually. I'm not saying all the Rishonim agree with this, but I think from a conceptual standpoint, it's easier to understand the background of this malacha if you take their analysis, is that as long as I'm involved in the actual construction of the item, I'm clunking things together, I'm constructing things, I'm putting the pieces in, that's bone. So that's the actual formation of the item. I took pieces, I put those pieces together, and now I was bone something. I made it into a structure, I made it into a vessel. That would be the malacha of bone. But makeh bepatish is once the item, the pieces have been put together, but for whatever reason, the item wasn't used until this last point, until the finishing touches. That would be the malacha of bone. Of makeh bepatish, I'm sorry. That after it's actually constructed, I still wasn't using the item until the uman, the expert, whatever it is, the craftsman, put on its finishing touches. Now, this finishing touches, it could be what's making this useful, even though technically, on a practical level, I could use this item way before. Let's say you have a person who, I don't know, makes mugs or whatever, and he's making the mugs and he's forming, he's taking it out of the kiln, it's totally formed, it's in the mug shape, it's totally usable, I could put the hot water right in right then, but he puts on his design. He's oset sura on the outside of the mug before he sells it, before he gives it out. So that says that the Rishonim, right, that's also That's also makabe patish, because that is, it's not going to be used until that final touch, that final, even if it's a design, that would be malacha makabe patish. I'm not involved in the construction, in the formation. I'm just in the final additional elements, which would be makabe patish. If that would be the case, so these Rishonim are saying, you can never be chayiv for makabe patish when you're mechayiv for another malacha like bona. It has to be after the bona process, or after I finish the item. It could be outside of bona also. Let's say the Rishonim discuss what happens if I'm writing a Sefer Torah on Shabbos. But I'm writing a Sefer Torah on Shabbos, right? So the Rishonim write, what happens if I write the last letter? So that should be makabe patish. So the Rishonim say, no, you're in the middle of kosev. You're doing another malacha. You're not finishing. You're making the actual Sefer Torah at that point in time. So there can't be makabe patish when there's another malacha going on. There's a fascinating shita of Rav Asher Weiss. Rav Asher Weiss is of the opinion. This is, you know, Rav Asher Weiss in some areas has some excellent kulas to rely on and leniencies. But in this one area, no one knows that this one area just really changes. I think I even heard him once make a joke. If I remember correctly, I think I heard this from his mouth. He said, I need to be machmir on something. So, you know, I could have, you know, so he said that, but his, you know, his tshuvas are excellent and so geshmak, and he's not just Tama Mekel, but happens to be. There are certain things that he's leaning about, but this really changes everything. He holds that any time there's no other malacha, but it's clear that you're doing something productive. So he holds from a Yerushalmi that the Yerushalmi says, so then that was makabe patish. That's the way we assume. And he assumes la halacha that to use electricity on Shabbos would be a malacha d'oraisa of makabe patish. That you're now making something functional, and that would be makabe patish d'oraisa. The assumption, according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, was that use of electricity would not necessarily be a malacha d'oraisa, which really affects Rabbanim, because there are a lot of shailas that we get into based on situations like we discussed before, adding other derabbanans. Are we dealing with a derabbanan or a deraisa? So the most important thing that when really understanding malachas is what level are you talking about? Are you involved in malachas deraisa? Are you involved in malachas derabbanan? Namely, can a goy help? Can I do it with a shinoi? What type of severity am I dealing with now? And how much can I apply now? Other leniencies really depends on whether or not I'm going to be involved with deraisa derabbanan. So that's in terms of makabe patish. But essentially, what's really applicable in terms of makabe patish is for us, when we're finishing up and making things useful that weren't necessarily useful beforehand. Okay? The Gemara has many different examples of these type of items, and there doesn't have to be screwed in, because that was all bona klolin. It doesn't have to be tight. It's anything that's an action that now makes this item useful, even if it wasn't useful or it wasn't going to be used beforehand. One of the examples of the Gemara is to put feathers in a pillow. You put feathers in the pillow, the Gemara says, you're chayiv chatos. It's unbelievable. You put feathers in, you fluff up the pillow, you put feathers in the pillow, that's the malacha of makabe patish. Gemara has another example, hapoiseach beis hatzavar. You have a beautiful garment, right, that you got from the store. But in the old times, their garments, the necks weren't open. They weren't able to be used until you would just rip open the top and now make it have the hole so that you can slip it onto the person and have the hole for your head on. So the Gemara says, HaPoiseach Beis HaTzavar, Chayiv Chatos. Rashi says, why are you Chayiv Chatos? Rashi says, because you're Chayiv Mishum Makabe Patish. Because now you're finishing the item. You're not constructing the item. The item was fully sewn. But now I make it usable, because now I make it that now it has a slot for my head. So something internally problematic with the item, and therefore I finish it. Or even taking an external item and adding it to my item would also be a problem. The Gemara talks about, the Shulchan Aruch quotes, lacing shoes. People had this shaila earlier this year. They were talking about boots, brand new boots, and they forgot to put the laces in, and they asked me if they can do that on Shabbos. That's a shaila d'oraisa of makabe patish, because you're probably not going to take those laces out. Those laces are going to stay in. And now you completed, even though the shoe is fully constructed, the shoe is functional, but you're not going to use it without that. That would be something internally that you now completed without binyan, without another malacha, but I just violated malachas makabe patish. What about another example? Let's say this touches on things like air mattresses. You know, let's say you had a mutter way of blowing up an air mattress. I would blow it up, or a beach ball. So the post Rosh Shlomo Zalman writes in Shmiras Shabbos Kochas, they quote from Rosh Shlomo Zalman that if you're initially, like, because the Gemara says there, if you're putting the feathers in the pillow for the first time, you're finishing the kli for the first time, that would be a malacha of makrav patish, similar to the shoelaces. So now, if I'm putting the air in a ball for the first time, so that would be a problem of maleches makrav patish. But once it already had air once in, so then Rosh Shlomo Zalman says that's no longer makrav patish. Now it's just, it's like now it's just derech tashmisho. Now it's just an air, it gets blown up sometimes, it gets blown up. So they asked him, they said, what do you mean? You're creating a ball every time for the first time. So it's like, because they asked him, they said, you're putting in new air. That air wasn't there the first time. You're not, it's not like the situation of lacing old shoelaces or putting in the, back in the feathers. No, you're making the cleat for the first time every time you blow it up. So he thought that we view it as if it initially the way it was, even though it's new air. And he thought that it would be permissible to re-blow up the air. In terms of balloons, he wrote that there's another problem when it comes to balloons, because not because of makav patish, but because often in the balloons they tie at the end. So if you tie it, that's not going to be a malach of kosher, and that would be a serious problem with balloons. But in terms of beach balls, this comes up. That would depend if it's being built, blown up for the first time or for another time. What else comes up in terms of maleches makev patish? So, putting on certain items onto, let's say, a dress that's not usually taken on, taken off. My belt is allowed to be put on my pants because I always take it on and off, switch the pants. But let's say you have dresses often that this is a part of the dress that I didn't put on, and I'm going to leave it on there, and that's normal for it to be put on, and this is the, and I wouldn't wear it otherwise without this. So that could potentially be an issue of melech smakav patish. It could be very simple ideas. The Gemara says you take a piece of wood and you just form it into be a toothpick. The Gemara says you could be chayv and esedar raisa. You just took a piece of raw wood and now you made it into a toothpick. You made it functional. That's a melech of makav patish that a person could be chayv for. I remember I was once speaking in Florida, and it was mincha time, and there was a kid there that was sitting next to his father, and he had a tag on his shirt, so he was about to rip it off, and his father said, no, you can't do that, you can't rip off the tag on Shabbos. So he says, why not? So he says, ask the rabbi. So he turned to me, and I was a guest there, so he says to me, Rabbi, can I rip the tag on Shabbos? I said, sure, you can rip the tag on Shabbos. So why are you allowed to rip the tag on Shabbos? The father was shocked. So how can you rip the tag on Shabbos? So we don't learn the details of Korea. We need to talk about that. But why isn't it malach of makav patish? I'm now making the item useful. So that's an important distinction that highlights this idea. You're not making the item useful internally. Internally, the shirt is beautiful. I'm not like the situation where I opened up the neck that the shirt itself wasn't useful. I have an external impediment. I have something else externally hanging off of the shirt that would be technically problematic. So just because I wouldn't wear it beforehand, you know, that's not really, the item is totally, so all the poskim suggest that ripping off the tag would be something that would not be considered makav patish, and is actually something that's mutter on Shabbos. So these are just some of the examples of makav patish. We didn't have so much time to discuss, but there's a lot more to discuss in makav patish, because Chazal made gzeiras. Anytime you would fix an item, that would be a derabbanan called metakin mana, or potentially even be a deraisa of metakin mana. So Chazal made certain gzeiras. We don't have time to really get into it right now because we went way over. But there's more to talk about in terms of makav patish. But what I would like to get to, I have to figure out when, is to take all the different things that we learned about, with a few additional malachas that we have to do, and speak about opening packages on Shabbos. Now that we learned about binyan, about makav patish, about some of these malachos, so when are we allowed to open packages? How are we allowed to open packages? What is the issue with opening packages? Big, big, big tumult in the poskim in terms of opening packages, so hopefully sometime we will get to that. I'm not sure exactly when, but that's in terms of that. Let me just quickly just share a brief idea. Just a little over time. I don't have so much time, but we land in this week's parsha, the Tochacha. The Tochacha is a very difficult parsha, and the second time that the Tochacha is repeated is in Parshas Kisavo. In Parshas Kisavo, so the Tochacha is read right before Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara Megillah says, Tich Lashana v'kilosea. Everyone on each and every individual level has, you know, some Tochacha and has some hopefully not as severe as what the Torah is referring to, but wants Kadosh Baruch Hu to finish the year, and hopefully we daven that Rosh Hashanah we shouldn't be faced with these difficult predicaments. Just reminds me that this shir should be a schus refuah shlema for Baruch Tzvi ben Rivka Basi, who needs rachmei shamayim. Immediately after the Tochacha in Parshas Kisavo, the immediately following that parsha is Atem Nitzavim Hayom, Kulchem Hayom. So Rashi says, what's the juxtaposition, what's the connection between the Tochacha, the Klalos, the curses, and Atem Nitzavim Kulchem Hayom? What is the Torah referring to? So Rashi gives us a little background from the Medrash. Rashi says, Klal Yisrael lost it. Klal Yisrael heard the Klalos from Moshe Rabbeinu, and they said, we just can't handle this. And they just started collapsing. They started fainting. They couldn't hold their own. They couldn't do it anymore. Moshe Rabbeinu starts with some words of chizuk. Moshe Rabbeinu tries to be maimed them. Moshe Rabbeinu tries to be mechazik them. Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, it's true that they are klolos, but atem nitzavim, you all are standing here and you're chosen, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to help you and you're going to make it. And he gives them chizuk, which is such an important idea that we need to learn before Rosh Hashanah, that we shouldn't collapse. That's why we have Rosh Hashanah, a Yom Simcha. Still remember, I went to the Talmud Rebbe, the Rebbetzin and I, over the summer, we sat and we schmoozed with the Talmud Rebbe. It was such a beautiful idea, a beautiful experience. And I asked him, before I go back to the shul, I asked the Talmud Rebbe, I said, what message should I give the Olam before Rosh Hashanah? What should I tell everyone in the shul? Talmud Rebbe is, I think, one of the most incredible minds, credible people in the world today. Just an unbelievable, unbelievable Rebbe of mine, an unbelievable Goin and Sadik and Gadol B'Shav Yisrael. So he says to me one thing. He says, you make sure that they go into Rosh Hashanah b'simcha. They should go with happiness. Don't go in nervous. Don't go in scared. That's not going to propel. That's not going to help them. That's not going to help their tefillos. That's not what the avodah of Rosh Hashanah is about. I was like shocked at him. I said, what? That's the one thing. Simcha. Just joy. Just, you know, dance. Dance, or make sure that there's going to be singing and happiness. That's the avod of Rosh Hashanah. People should be happy. Talmud Rebbe is a pikeach, a person who understands psychology also. He understands that we're all suffering in this door. And one of the reasons that avodas Hashem, that there's so much failing in avodas Hashem, is because we're not being ovid Hashem b'simcha b'tuv leviv, which is really the source of the klala of the tochacha. So he tried to be mechazik and say that the most important thing before tshuva, before anything else, is to have happiness in avodas Hashem, to have simcha sachayim. But the question is, if that's what Moshe Rabbeinu did in Parshas Tzavim for the Tochacha, in Parshas Kisavo, so begs the question, so in Parshas Bechukosai, where there's also a Tochacha, there's also klalos that we say before Shavuos, Tich Lashana V'Kilosei, we want to make sure that the klalos before Shavuos are done, just like we do before Rosh Hashanah, so where's the Parshas Tzavim? But Bamidbar, I don't get any chizuk from Bamidbar. So you're back in the desert. What's such a great chizuk in that? Where's the chizuk in this week's parsha? This is a beautiful idea from the Chiddush Arim and the Leif Simcha and the Ger Rebbes, that they developed this idea. Mamish, a beautiful idea. If you look carefully in this week's parsha, you look at the parsha immediately following the Tochacha and Parshas Bechukosai, the Klolos and Parshas Bechukosai. Is the parsha of what? Does anyone know? It's a hard one. It's the parsha of Erchin. What is Erchin? I'm holding a Masechus Erchin over here. What's Erchin? Whole Masechta about this topic. Erchin, if you look in this week's parsha, Erchin is value. Erchin means value. person says, I'm not going to donate this cup to Beis HaMikdash. I'm not going to donate this tape recorder to the Beis HaMikdash. I'm not going to donate this carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, this animal to the Beis HaMikdash. What if a person says, Erki Alai, I'm going to give my value to the Beis HaMikdash. Erech Shulchan Ze le Beis HaMikdash. Erech Ishazu le Beis HaMikdash. Erchin, the Kohen has to come and assess, and that's a lot of this week's parsha has the laws of what's the value of an Isha at this age? What's the value of a child at this age? What's the value of a baby that was just born at this age? What's the value of a Zakin? It's fascinating. And you see throughout the Gemaras, who's worth more at an older age? You get a kick out of this. That when you get older, the Gemara says the woman is worth much more than the men because you know he can't do anything and he fetches much more, and you know, so that's already the svaras are there in the Gemara. Most through all the different, how much am I chayav when I pay, when I make these statements and I say erchen erchen erchen. What's the pshat? So said the Chiddush Arim a beautiful pshat. Chiddush Arim said we listen to the klalos and we also collapse in Parshas Bechukosai. We also get nervous and we also become depressed. You also see what happens when we're unsuccessful. But then HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a chizuk also in this week's parasha, just not as well known, until the Chiddush Arim introduced it to us. Chiddush Arim says, I want each and every yid, in every situation, whether you're old, you're a zkena, you're a zaken, you're a tinok ben shloshim yom, whatever stage you're in, every single member of Klal Yisrael has erech, has value, has a tachlis, has a purpose, and is here for a reason. And don't let all of these situations, the fact that there's a system, the fact that there's punishment, okay, that means we have to have a normal society, we have to make sure that there's a balance, that we're making sure that there's repercussions for keeping the laws. We have a judicial system. But don't now think that means that I'm not going to succeed. That I don't have a purpose, that I don't have a value. I have an erech. But I think the Chiddush Arim is much deeper. I was developing this idea, if you look carefully in the Psukim, that's for another time where I'll show you the sources. But it's more than that. It's not just erech for each and every one of us to know on our own that we have value. But it's important, the Torah has another parsha of being ma'arich someone else. It's important for us to give value to other people. The Torah talks in this week's parsha about a mach, a person who has those unsuccessful days, those difficult days, those days that they just want to go in the corner and they just want to cry. And then someone else walks over and they say, Erech Yidzu Alai! I want to give the value of this individual to the Beis HaMikdash. He's ma'arechim. He's not the Narach, he's not the... I am taking his value, I'm donating his value. It's on me, I'm pledging this. Whatever his value is. What is that parsha telling you? It means the erchin is not only your personal worth, but the Torah is telling you that you as Klal Yisrael have to walk around and look at those people that are having those difficult stages, those difficult days, and now be ma'arich their value. Let them know that they have value. Let them know that they have a purpose. Let them know that just because today was so difficult doesn't mean that that's going to be the future. I'm going to be ma'arich your value even though you feel like a moch, even though you feel like a nothing, even though you feel like a destitute individual, which is what a moch actually means. Someone else comes over and pledges their value and gives them chizuk. That's the way Klal Yisrael succeeds. That's the parsha. That's the recovery system after the difficulties of life, after the parsha of Bichukosai. That's the parsha's nitzavim that's found immediately after the klalos that are in Vayikra before Shavuos of Parsha's Bichukosai. That's the way we become an Am. That's the way we become an Am, which is what Shavuos is all about, the first Yontif, that we actually become a nation. We can't just know that we personally have value. We have to make sure that the people around us feel that we believe in their value. We believe in their value. We're ma'arich them. Mirtz Hashem, if we not only believe in each other, but this is most importantly important for our children. Our children have to know, and most importantly for the mother. The mother has to, whatever happens in school, whatever difficult challenge happens, there's always going to be, every child is going to go through difficult stages, whether it's socially, whether it's in terms of scholastics, in terms of schooling, in terms of learning, in terms of interactions with teachers, with principals, whatever it is, the child should not feel that the parent is not ma'arich them anymore. The parent has to, in their way, follow the parsha and say, I'm pledging your koichus. I'm pledging that to the Beis HaMikdash. I'm ma'arich. I give value to what you represent. I know your koichus. And if a child feels from his or her parents that they're ma'arich, and they get out of that parsha of being a mach, and they feel that their parents believe in them, there is no way that that child will not be successful. That's all you need in successful parenting, is to be ma'arich, is after a parshas bechukosai, after difficult challenges, that you have parents that are now willing to pledge to the Beis HaMikdash and believe in those kochos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave each and every one of our children. Okay, we will, Mirtz Hashem,